from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 108, recorded live Wednesday, April 9th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott sits down with Robbie, Gary, and Andy from Planet Argon, a local Rails shop in Portland, Oregon, and talks about distributed source control with Git.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm sitting here in Portland, Oregon, my hometown, at Planet Argon, a Ruby on Rails shop downtown Portland. I've gotten here with Robbie, Gary, and Andy from Planet Argon, and they're all Rails developers, and they've recently started using Git, G-I-T. Git is a new distributed or newish distributed source control system from Linus Torvalds himself. And as myself, being an old Subversion guy from way back, and these guys have recently moved from Subversion or moving from Subversion to Git, I wanted to sit down and find out what all the hype is about Git. So you've been using Subversion for your Rails work for years?
Yes, we've been using Subversion for as long as the company's been around, definitely for as long as I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And we just recently started switching to Git, and we don't have a centralized Git server yet, but we're using Git against the Subversion server using Git SVN.
Mm-hmm. Now, I started out in source control using zip files, and I just change the file name and I stick it over there.
Right.
And Linus did that. He made tarballs and he put mm-hmm. them off in the corner, and that's enough source control for me. And then as a Microsoft developer, I started using SourceSafe, which was just a big cloud of source in the sky, and there was this notion of checkout and check-in, and it was a pessimistic checkout model such that I would check something out, and it was mine. There was no notion of optimistic concurrency in the sense of just get it out mm-hmm. and edit it, and we'll worry about merging later. So that was a big change for me to go from a SourceSafe model to a Subversion model.
Right.
Now, Subversion seemed great. I mean, I have no problem with Subversion. The only time things go wrong with Subversion is when I branch the code and try to merge it back in.
Right, and that's one place that Git really shines. Subversion always talks about how branching is really easy and really fast, and it's a shallow copy. But in Git, they try and make merging really easy. And so the branching is really easy too, but really, if you can't merge, what's the point of branching? So Git really tries to make that easy.
Okay. So with Subversion, it's all in the file system. There's no database like there was in the SourceSafe world. There was just this big binary blob and the source was out there. With Subversion, there's a file system you can look at. So when I make a branch, I'm really doing this on the file system.
Correct.
But I'm doing it on a main centralized server that's out in the cloud somewhere.
Right.
Now, while I can get on an airplane with Subversion and start editing my code, mm-hmm. I can't really make local labels. I can't say, well, I need unlimited undo because I'm on an airplane.
Right.
Subversion's not out there. So people keep saying that Git is a distributed system. Where's that main cloud machine?
So the way it works is that every single Git checkout is a full repository. So you have all of the revision history mm-hmm. sitting there in your directory, and you can make commits to it. And when the concept of central server is different, it's not something you're making commits to. It's you're pushing the commits that you've already made locally. So you make commits locally, and then you can push that set of commits to a central server.
Okay. So it's a kind of a multi-phased commit.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. So that it's sitting on my local machine. Do I have a server on my machine, or is it really
no? It's just interacting with the database directly. There's a set of files that mm-hmm. maintain the revision history.
Okay, so as a Windows developer, I installed Git, and I had to get Cygwin, which is a Unix subsystem, and I noticed that Git is put together with Bash and scripts, and it's kind of this MacGyver-like thing. I assume it's less so on OS X, which you guys are using?
Yeah, because Git is developed for Unix-type environments, it's really simple, trivial to install it with Mac ports. So we're able to just do a port install git-core, and then we're able to pass plus SVN. So we get the SVN support built into Git, and that's pretty much all we have to do to get Git up and running on our machines. And then mm-hmm. we have the Git command available from our terminal.
So in my system, I got a Git shell. So basically a custom DOS prompt in the Windows world that looks like it's got all the paths and everything. So I can type things like git status and git add and things like that. And I said, create repository, and a little .git folder appeared in my folder, and it was cool. That's all it was. There was no service that was installed. Nothing was running in the background. It just simply worked. I assume it's all the same whether I'm on Linux OS 10 or Windows.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, I've actually never used it on Windows, so I'm not really familiar with how Windows users are interacting with it. But as far as it's concerned, as Andy was saying, it's all just that there's basically a database that gets added to your local directory, and then everything is self-contained in that directory. So
as a single developer doing this work, I've made changes to files, I've added files, I've committed, and I've got some rudimentary visual tools for seeing branching and whatnot. But I don't have a centralized location to push changes up to. So from the point of view of a single developer, on my local machine, it feels like Subversion in the sense that I'm making commits and I can tag things and I can branch. I've done a couple of merges. So far it feels like a local Subversion repository. And I've made those before. A lot of people think of Subversion as being centralized, but you can say file colon whack whack and suddenly you're doing Subversion locally. What part of Git am I not seeing? Is that notion of a central server to push to?
With Git, you can do that. You can still have a central server. Like, I don't, if you're worried about backing up things, so it's not all local.
Well, I guess I'm saying that when Linus isn't really building the Linux kernel on his laptop and then releasing it to the world. Surely there's a build server somewhere. There must be an authoritative source to say that's the branch. That's the main branch.
Exactly. So, I mean, you can have a Git repository stored on a server that is a central server, but it's just like the repository that's on your local laptop.
It's exactly
It's not special in any way. Usually there's not a working directory with all the files in it. It's just the database. I mean, you can do that either
way. So it's just another peer.
Exactly. And so you generally have one of these central servers, which is authoritative in some way because of who's hosting it. So Linus has a central server somewhere that you can pull from and pull down the kernel tree, but it's his kernel tree. And somebody else can have a Git server that that has their version of the kernel tree, and they can make their own changes to it. And then the really cool part is that because these are just two peers, the second the somebody else's kernel tree, they can just send Linus a pull request or just say, pull from my tree. And then Linus can say, okay, pull in those changes from that source over there, push them up to his server, and then all of the changes have been made it to the into the authoritative server.
Okay, so let's try to put this more at the hello world stage.
Okay.
So Andy has got Git in his machine.
Right.
He sets up a folder, he says create repository, and we make the new hello world application.
Correct.
You add a bunch of files to it, you commit, you say initial check-in.
Right.
And this exists only on your machine.
Correct.
Then you make changes to it, you say git space status, and it says that you've got three files that have changed. You commit them, and you say second change. Now, how do I get your stuff?
If I'm working on a server, if I'm working on like my desktop or something like that,
okay,
it's perfectly reasonable to have the ability to push to that repository
just via file sharing or via
you can run it on over SSH. So if Macs have an SSH server built in, you can do that in Linux, of course, too.
Okay,
but what would make more sense is that if I have like some Linux server in some back closet somewhere, I can make a Git repository there, push my changes to it.
Via HTTP, via SSH, whatever protocol.
There's a Git protocol that's sort of the common one. It's really, really efficient for just pushing the changes that are necessary.
Okay.
And then you can talk to that same repository and pull down my changes.
I could have got it from you directly.
Right.
Or from this.
Exactly. There's no difference in the server.
So we could say there's a build server. I could get it from there.
Exactly.
Or I could get it from you.
I mean, administratively, it makes more sense to have a central server because I don't necessarily want to have you have SSH access or get access to my machine, whereas if you have the central server.
And I understand that one of the things that's fundamental to Git is this notion of these unique IDs. There's a unique ID for every check-in, a globally unique
ID. Correct, and it's simply the SHA-1 sum of the contents of that check-in.
It's a SHA-1 hash of the contents of the check-in.
Correct. So content's the same, you get the same check-in.
Okay.
These are all just nodes in a graph. So you have a directed graph, and every time you check in, you get a new node in the graph. There's a new pointer to the graph.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some label that says this is the head.
Okay, so we've got a number of distributed systems that all have Git on them. They all have local repositories of our Hello World application.
Correct.
Every time someone makes a change and checks it in, there's a hash of that batched up check-in that's created and stored in that database so that I can point to something, anyone's commit, and say that not only is this unique and identifiable, but I'm also I can't go back and change history. It's because you said it's cryptographically significant, I assume that means that I can't go back three versions and lie and make it look like that's what you checked in because I've got a little bit of
it's interesting. Protection there. You can, in a way, you can go back and edit commit messages. You can go back in the commit history, but so the sort of main competing revision control system is Mercurial.
Yeah, Mercurial is the one that everyone brings up on the Windows side because it has a little bit better Windows support.
Exactly. So Mercurial is very similar to Git. It uses the same sort of directed graph. The database is the same, and but in Mercurial, the immutable revision history is very, very true. You can't
very immutable.
Very immutable. Yes.
I guess that would be more immutable than
right. So in Git there are ways that you can change things. Okay.
But the intent is that one can't modify
right.
history.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
So then you've got one and I've got one and the build server got one and we don't actually declare one branch the head like you would in Subversion. This notion of the head, it's more of a convention. People declare Linus's branch as the head simply via we trust him.
Right. Well, I mean, well, there's two different concepts there. There's branches, which are different copies within the same repository, and then you have separate repositories. So,
okay,
there you're talking about like Linus's repository is the authoritative one, and that's true. So you have kernel.org, which is the authoritative, you know, Git repository for the kernel.
Okay.
And as far as branches go, there's a convention of the master branch in Git, which allows you to
is that just the first one?
It is. I mean, it's the one that gets created. It's the one you commit to when you just create a branch, and it's the one you switch back to.
So on my Windows machine, I noticed that I have one called master, and it was just the initial one. I made a couple of other ones.
Exactly. So
now, on my system, I've just been saying check out and then picking a different branch, and then the folder, my main folder I've been doing all of my development, and simply changes into that branch.
Exactly.
Now, would I want to make different sandboxes? It's just simply a matter of making a folder and saying check out, and then I've got another repository? Or is there a convention? Do most people keep multiple versions, or do they just change one folder kind of moving around?
Yeah, most people just keep one folder and then just sort of move the working directory around. Mm-hmm. So you have the index and the database behind that, and then you can just change the working directory to point at whichever spot in the tree you want.
Now, in Subversion, we called that an SVN switch.
Right, exactly.
And if I remember correctly, in my days of Subversion, which is it's been about a year now, I got nailed several times in Subversion where I would have things that weren't quite committed and Subversion got confused because I had something in a non-committed state. Can the same things happen in Git?
Basically, if something bad's going to happen, it won't let you do it. So if you have uncommitted changes that will overwrite things, it'll say, no, you can't.
Because that was my fear. I'm going to lose this uncommitted change.
Right. So if you have an uncommitted change that conflicts with something in the other branch you're switching to, then it'll complain. It won't let you do it.
It won't let me check out.
Right.
Okay.
So there's a command that's called git stash that'll basically just store away all of your uncommitted changes. It just puts them somewhere. Ah. And then you can switch to your master branch, do your changes,
come back. So it's not quite a commit.
Right, it's not a commit. There's no commit message. It's just hiding them away for a minute. And then when you come back to that branch and you want to pick up where you left off, you do git stash apply, and that puts all your changes back.
This makes me feel, is this a distributed source control system or just a very clever journaled file system?
It actually has a lot of similarities to file systems. Linus, of course, is a kernel developer, so he used a lot of the semantics of file systems to develop the database.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me, but one of the things that I'm finding myself doing is forgetting to add files in. I'll make a new file, and I'll go editing and editing and editing, and then I'll realize as it comes time to commit that I never added it. Is this just something that I have to learn?
Yeah, I mean, it tells you if you do git status, it says these files are untracked by Git. So I don't know. I run into the same thing in Subversion. I forget to add my files.
Yeah, I did the same thing. So the reason I ask is I'm trying to understand. I think that one of the things a Microsoft guy said once, who was the chief architect of Visual Studio, said that he wants to design a product that lets you fall into the pit of success. So even if you screw up and you fall, you're landing in a good place. And I like products that are not going to let me screw up, basically. I don't want too much rope. I don't want a loaded gun, you know.
And Git does give you a fair amount of rope, but it's getting better all the time. It's a lot easier to use now. It's a lot easier to stab yourself in the toe now than it was a year ago or 2 years ago.
So what's the relationship between your existing Subversion repositories and this new Git repository? Because I understand you didn't just switch over.
No, we still have our Subversion repositories. And basically, we're using it as though it's like a wrapper at the moment around our Subversion repositories. Mm-hmm. But we get part of the power of Git, you know, all the benefits of being able to work offline, create local branches and so on, but we're still connected to our Subversion repositories.
Interesting. So how many times are you checking in on your Git repository, which I would think we would call a local commit, where you're basically using the Git repository as an unlimited local personal undo system with commits and notes, and then Subversion, which are you checking in once a day, once a week?
The way that we do it is, I mean, you can build up commits throughout the day, and obviously we're doing constant backups throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But we also try to encourage people, when possible, to check back into the main repository.
Mm-hmm. Have you gotten a sense of the tempo? Because I think that one of the things that a lot of the agile and test-driven development people that I talk to like about Git is the idea that I might check in after every successful test. I mean, someone might literally check in every, 10, 15 minutes. While in Subversion, that might be an expensive operation. And I'm wondering if this is interesting, that someone might want to not go all Git all the time. They might want to just use it locally and then stick with whatever their corporate mandated, whether it be TFS on the Microsoft side or Subversion or whatever, as their centralized location and build server.
Well, just go back to a little bit about the tempo. We all kind of work in different ways. And I think at the moment, if you look at what we've been doing, Andy tends to keep hold of things a little longer. While some of us, we check in more often. Mm-hmm. It really depends a lot on how many people are working on something and how closely related it is, I guess. Obviously, if you've got a few people who are all waiting for something to be checked in, then we'll encourage people to do that more often.
So are you using Git locally and personally, or do you get information to Andy by pushing it up to Subversion and then he gets it down, or do you go sideways?
That's correct, yeah.
So interesting. Uh-huh. So even though Git is a distributed versioning system, you're not quite at the point where you're going peer-to-peer. You're still using Subversion as that hub.
This is one of the great things that we found, actually, is that it allows us to, play around with Git, get used to all the different features that it offers, but we don't have to jump right in yet. So it's a good little stepping stone on the way to getting there. And we do have plans to move to it eventually because everybody enjoys using it. Hmm. But this is a great little stepping stone.
What do you think, Robbie?
I also want to follow up on that a little bit more. One of the other constraints that we have is that we some of the clients that we work with have their own Subversion repositories. Hmm. So we actually can't dictate what we're actually going to use for the whole project, and they'll have their own developers working on the project as well. So we're able to start connecting to their existing Subversion repositories and through Git, and we're actually able to keep following the same Git process and then keep pushing to their Subversion repository. And that's been working really well for us as well.
So I think this would be really useful for a consultant. A roaming consultant could keep Git stuff locally, but he might be doing CVS one place and zip files in another and something else somewhere else. So in a second here, I want to ask you about Git as it relates to SVN, because I understand that there's some SVN tools that are built into Git. But real quickly, we just need to pay the bills and thank our sponsors. Hi, it's Scott here from Another Place in Time. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I apologize for interrupting it, but I wanted to let you know that assembling a podcast like this every week isn't free. Certainly the bandwidth bill crushes us every month, so I want to let you know that this show is sponsored by Telerik. They make the show possible, and they make some pretty cool products as well. For example, if you're trying to build a Web 2.0 Ajaxy application, trying to use the Web 1.0 components, it's kind of difficult. You got to get the next-gen stuff if you want to build the next-gen websites, and that's exactly what the folks at Telerik have got in their new upcoming product, which is codenamed Rad Controls Prometheus. It's a big pack of web controls built entirely on top of the Microsoft ASP.NET Ajax stuff that you already understand. It's going to give you a lot of performance and interactivity on your next project. They mirror the ASP.NET Ajax API, so the development's really straightforward. Client scripts are shared, loading time is pretty fast. You set a couple of properties, you can even bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor for ASP.NET Ajax loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the RAD grid will do thousands of records in milliseconds. But of course, it's better to try these things for yourself. So you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET Ajax and download a trial. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll get right back to the show. All right. So a moment ago, I wanted to ask you, Robbie, about Subversion as it relates to Git, because you were saying that there are some tools that Git comes with where Git itself knows about Subversion.
Yeah. When you install Git, depending on how you install it on our Macs, we're able to install the SVN extensions for Git, which is something that comes with Git if you install it. So that allows you to automatically connect to a Subversion repository. So it's trying to encourage people to move away from Subversion. That's something that the Git project actually decided to do. Hmm. So that's not something we have to install from some other third party. That's actually coming from
Git. So what does that give you? Connect to a Subversion repository in what respect? In the sense that Andy's saying, use Git locally and sort of kind of as a migration path?
Yeah. So basically, it ends up providing you another command called git svn, git-svn, or git-svn, depending on your platform. But that's allowing you to basically check out from a Subversion repository, commit back to a Subversion repository, and do many of the Subversion tasks that you would normally do if you're using the svn command. So we're able to do that through Git.
Hmm. And do you think that that's something that you'll stick with, or is your goal to get completely away from svn?
It would be nice to move completely away from Subversion, but I mean, the realities are that some of our projects, we are working with other clients that have Subversion already in place, so we're going to have to work with those customers. But for our own projects, we're using Git. I have a couple of open source projects, and so does Andy, that are using Git. We're using GitHub for that, which is a new Git hosting service, which is also where Ruby on Rails is moving towards as well.
Right, because Ruby on Rails is going to be moving right now completely from Subversion over to Git, and they're hosting at github.com. Now, one of the things that I thought was interesting about Git was that Subversion touts itself as only storing deltas. Like, that's a good thing. We don't store the full file. You know, we store these deltas of files. Well, in Git, they're saying, well, disk space is cheap, plus I don't trust anyone. Therefore, not only do I not want to have a centralized server that could be corrupted, but I don't even want to let there be diffs of files. I want to have the full file all the time.
What's really interesting is that the Git repository is almost always smaller than the Subversion, the equivalent Subversion checkout. So
there's a certain irony in that.
I have Subversion checkouts that, without the full revision history, are still 1.5 times as big as the Git checkout with the full revision history. I don't really know the details of how the database is stored, but I mean, Linus is obviously a really smart guy. He built it based on...
I'm starting to realize that.
He built it based on file system techniques, and like I said earlier. So he does some cool things. You can repack the repository and make it smaller. You reduce the number of files, so you just have one big file that has all the little packs in it, and so you don't have the huge number of files. You also just have the one .git directory rather than .svn directories all over your source control tree.
Oh, interesting. So I haven't gone a couple deep. So you're saying that there at the root of your repository, there's a .git folder that would be invisible. It's kind of the Git is here thing.
Hidden directory.
Well, in Subversion, you get these .svn files kind of littered throughout your...
So you just have that one Git directory. Hmm. What's interesting is that to turn a Git repository into just a checkout, like, or an export in Subversion speak, all you have to do is remove that .git directory, and then it's just your checkout. So there's no concept of Git export, because you just Git checkout just or Git clone folder, and then you just remove that folder.
Now, one of the things that was really interesting about Subversion that took me a while was that, and it was an improvement over CVS, which is where I was originally, was that I could rename a file and not lose my history. How does that work in Git?
Well, Git tracks the content, so it doesn't actually track the files directly, but if you copy a file, then the SHA-1 sum of that file is the same, or mostly the same. So even
though... Well, it's a SHA-1 hash. It's either the same or it's not. There's no mostly the same.
I don't know the details of how it keeps track of what's the same or not, but it does keep track of partial changes.
But in your daily life, as you're using Git and you go and rename something, still follow the history back.
Yeah. So I move the file, I Git delete the old file, I Git add the new file, and then when I check in, it says copy or move.
So remove is just that. It's a delete and an add.
Right. So that, but
because the hash is the same of the content.
But it detects the change. So you don't have, there is no, well, I think there probably is a git move, but you don't have to use it. It still will detect the change.
I'm sure you can do it in one.
Exactly. And it happens all the time where I'll check in something. I'll duplicate some file. I mean, I won't even copy it directly. Like, But just in my text editor, I'll copy most of the contents. This happens a lot in HTML files, mm-hmm. change a few things. And then when I do a get check-in, it says copy rather than a new file.
So everyone picks on Subversion when it comes to merges and branches. They're mm-hmm. saying that, you know, branches are pretty straightforward once you understand how Subversion's URL addressing scheme works. But in Git, I just gave it a name. I think I called it I'm trying something. And then I went off and I fooled around with it. I committed. And then I said, I want to merge I'm trying something into master.
Right.
I did. There were a couple of things worked. There was one conflict where I changed the same line in two places.
Right.
I have to resolve that conflict and then I'm back in business. It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. It works really well. I find that there are usually a very small number of conflicts unless there's actually been conflicts. I mean, mm-hmm. it tends to be that you see conflicts in Git when some people have been changing the same part of the same file, which obviously it can't figure out.
Sure. It's interesting. It's starting to make it difficult. I'm trying to get my brain around this. And one of the things that really made me realize that Git was different was when I went over to GitHub, one of the options was most forked.
Right.
I wanted to see most popular.
Right.
But most forked meant that, you know, more and more people are forking. And I work on a number of open source projects. And
right.
one of them is called DOSBlog. It's a blogging system for .NET. And it's been forked once. And it freaked us out. And I went up on GitHub, and one project is forked like 73 times.
Right.
And I'm trying to understand, what does that mean?
So
forking is really just other people who've made their own repositories, right?
Right. So that's just like, it's the same as if I cloned it to my laptop or whatever, but it's just both on GitHub. So I just have my own repository, which mm-hmm. has the same contents. But the thing is that I might not have commit rights to your repository, but I have commit rights to my repository. So rather than checking out your code, formatting patches, emailing you patches, and then you applying them, all mm-hmm. I do is I fork your code, I make my changes, I add a new feature, I push my changes back up to GitHub, and then I send you a pull request. And then you, if you like my changes, just pull from my GitHub repository. There's no involvement from me.
Okay.
And it makes it a lot easier to add.
So let's back up and do that slower. Because right now, if someone wants to make a patch to my Subversion stuff in DOSBlog,
right.
they do a checkout.
Mm-hmm.
They can't commit back.
Right.
They make a patch, and they mail me the patch. I look at it, and I apply it, and then I check in.
Exactly.
In your instance, they've made a clone, and they've got the complete repository on their own machine.
Yep.
They never have to talk to you again.
But not just on their own machine. They have their complete repository on GitHub as well.
So when you fork, the central server's doing the same thing.
Right. So when you fork, you have... I would then have my own full repository of DOSBlog in this case on GitHub.
And this is an artifact of GitHub and the way they've decided to do things.
Exactly.
Not an artifact.
Exactly.
Okay.
I mean, as far as anyone's concerned, I could do this on my own server.
Right.
And then I could send you a pull request from that server.
So a pull request, is this something formal that has a protocol or is this just a convention?
It does in GitHub. GitHub has a system so I can click a button that says pull request and it'll send you an email saying pull.
Uh-huh.
But it's not actually a Git semantic.
So when I do a fork on this GitHub shared hosting system, I'm getting my own private master, for lack of a better word,
exactly.
that I can then commit to.
Exactly.
I won't sully yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go and say, hey, dude, look over here. This is cool.
Exactly.
This is interesting because this makes sense. This would be exactly how Linus would work.
Exactly.
I'm going to say his name a different way each time I say Linus. he has a trusted network of people that he believes are good. And then though his lieutenants have trusted networks of people.
Exactly.
And so on. Is that how it's working amongst the nine of you at your company?
We're not quite there yet. There are still some of us that are using Subversion. We have a couple of designers who aren't as tech savvy and
don't want to live in the command line.
We're not quite on the bleeding, they're not on the bleeding edge. They're mm-hmm. they're more comfortable with the command line than many, but we're getting there. So I mean, but that's sort of the goal. I mean, that would be awesome. But in our small company here, we're all going to have commit rights to the central server. So having each our own remote repository isn't necessarily going to mm-hmm. be the way we do it.
Now, you guys are doing everything at the command line. I know when I sat down and started messing around with Git as a Windows developer, it was really rather a bit shocking when I said git commit and suddenly vi popped up and I had to remember how to get out. I was trapped in the comments section for a second. Are you guys doing everything at the command line?
Yeah, we're pretty much doing everything that way. And it's interesting because my history was I used to be a .NET developer, and so I was used to using GUI tools.
Spirit. Hello.
And just over a year ago, I moved over. Hadn't used Unix for a long, long time.
What were you using for your as a .NET developer for your source control?
Initially, I was using SourceSafe, and as Team System came out, we switched to TFS.
So you've been on all the different systems. Okay, good.
Yeah, so I've only been using Subversion for a year, and now we're going through Git. So it's yet another change for me.
Yeah.
But transitioning from using front ends, having nice GUIs on everything. It was a little bit of a sort of jolt at first, but I got used to it very quickly. And now I feel like in some ways I have a little more control over what I do. It seems like there is a slightly steeper learning curve, but once you get past that, it's hard to describe, but I feel like I've got a little more control over what I'm doing.
Hmm. Now, have you found yourself making shell scripts or batch files to make things a little easier, or are you just doing git space command?
As far as I've gone, really is just aliasing stuff. Just some of the git commands are not really how I picture them being, so I've just set up aliases for them. Something that suits me in the way.
Yeah, made a few customizations, so it uses the verbs that you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
This is interesting that it really works the way that you want it to work.
Yeah, for the most part, it's been, to the level that we're using it right now, it's been pretty natural. And obviously, there is a lot more. If you look at some of the things that Andy talks about in his blog posts, it gets pretty complex, and I've yet to touch on some of that.
That's interesting, because Andy, I was looking at your blog, and I found a number of things that seemed fairly complex. You know, this isn't something that just junior developer sits down and starts using, I think. I mean, is it because it was designed with the Linux way of thinking, which is a little bit more, they assume that you have skills at some point, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have basic abilities.
I think so. I think that there's some amount of assumed knowledge when Linus was first writing Git, he was writing it for kernel developers and for people like him who are very comfortable with the command line, have a pretty good working grasp of different check-ins, check-outs, know what a directed graph might be.
But also patch files, the way the universal format works, VI.
Exactly.
awk and different, regular expressions. Right. So there's just a certain expectation that you get the Unix command line.
And I think that's definitely true. And it was a lot more true when Git first came out. Linus purposely wrote it to be a bunch of low-level C programs to modify the database directly, and then a few shell scripts on top of it to do sort of they call it the porcelain. And
interesting. The pretty stuff is called the porcelain.
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
So, all the porcelain has gotten much better in the past couple of years. So, in the beginning, I didn't use it right when it came out, but there were horror stories of how hard it was to use. So, it's gotten a lot better. Most of the semantics are the same. You still, as Subversion, you still check out, check in, status. These are all sort of the same things.
Right, there's a number of tutorials I've seen that say, here's Git from the Subversion user's point
of
view.
Exactly.
It definitely, though, compared to something like SourceSafe, which not only has basic simple things like Git version and check in, that's basic, Git latest and check in, but that notion that I can just change any file willy-nilly, whatever I want to do, and that was one of the most difficult things for my company that I used to work at when we moved from SourceSafe to Subversion, was this notion that you can't just check stuff out and lock it down.
Right.
But now the idea that I can have local commits, Linus brings this up in his YouTube video about Git, where he says he wanted to be able to be on a plane and make edits and then do local commits. Because I've used Subversion for years and always gotten nailed where I didn't check in for a day or two and I needed to back up just a few hours.
Right. And I've done that. I mean, I've made check-ins on planes. We took a business trip a couple of months ago and was doing some work on the plane across the Atlantic. And
now, if you make, say, 5 check-ins on a plane, and then is the term push that?
Yeah, push the.
Do all 5 commits go up there?
Yep, by default. You can, there are ways. This is where you get into editing the revision history. So you can squash commits down to a single commit.
Okay. That doesn't sound like that would be a good thing.
Not necessarily. I've done it a few times because I'm pushing to the Subversion server. So if I have 20 commits and it has to do.
But the commits were. Oh, I see. You're pushing to the Subversion server.
Right. So, I mean,
and those commits you don't want there.
So by default, if I make 5 commits locally and then I say get SVN decommit to push those to the Subversion server, then it will make 5 Subversion commits, just the same commits.
And you just said the term decommit?
Decommit is it's just the command. I don't actually know what it
is. Is it like DE commit?
No, just the letter D,
C-O-M-M-I-T. Oh, D. Okay. So get Subversion decommit. Okay, yep. But it's committing from your local commits up
right.
into Subversion.
Exactly. It's just pushing my commits that I've made locally to get up to the Subversion server.
So it really depends on whether or not those commits are significant to the rest of the team.
Exactly. So I mean, if I'm just saying like, oh, a little bit more work, you know, I made some more changes, and then there's one complete feature that I'm adding, I can rename those 5 commits, squash them down into one commit, put a new commit message saying I've added this feature and push that to Subversion. That's not as common in if you have a Git central repository because, I mean, the annoying thing is that when it's doing each of those Subversion commits, it's slow because it's got to basically push them to Subversion, pull down any changes from Subversion, do it again, do it again, do it again.
But most things in Git are fast because they're all local things.
Exactly.
Pushing files around locally.
Very, very fast.
Yeah. Now, here you were using TFS before, and TFS, I'm going to talk to those guys next week about, because they're a much more centralized thing, but they have issue tracking and bug tracking, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Were you using those features when you were using TFS?
When I began using it, we didn't go into a lot of depth on it. Let's see. We are pretty much working on the bleeding edge of whatever Microsoft were bringing out.
Oh, okay.
And so we adopted that as, you know, from the day it was available. Uh-huh. And primarily, the way I was using it was still as a sole developer, you know, working on an isolated project.
Just for the source control.
Yeah. And okay. So I didn't get into that, you know, too much. But it was obvious that it was better than SourceSafe.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there was no more corrupt databases and things like that.
Sometimes when people compare, like, Subversion to TFS or Subversion to some of these other tools that have issue tracking and stuff built in, it makes me wonder, when you're using Git or using Subversion, you must have an issue tracking, bug tracking system as well. Using Bugzilla, or what are you guys using?
We're using Lighthouse, which is developed by a local company written in Rails.
Okay.
And so that's working out pretty well for us. I don't know.
Does one want to plug those things in such that a check-in is attached to an issue?
We kind of have our own convention for that. So when we're we're fixing a bug that's in Lighthouse, we'll occasionally mention the Lighthouse bug ticket number in that commit, so people can kind of see the history because there's nothing directly connected. I've heard some rumors that there's supposed to be some integration between GitHub and Lighthouse in the near future when GitHub becomes publicly available, because right now it's invite only, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because also the Ruby on Rails project is also moving to Lighthouse as their primary ticket system.
Uh-huh.
So they're going to
Lighthouse open source too?
No, Lighthouse and GitHub are actually both commercial products.
Okay,
but they're free for open source developers to use, and they're going to have commercial, commercial account levels for private repositories and stuff like that. So we've actually looked at that as being a potential option for us to. So we'll have something like a central repository, but that would be GitHub for private repositories for our client.
Now, is there a Git repository browser like there was for like FishEye for Subversion, that you run around inside of Subversion on the web and look at charts and graphs and commit history and all those kinds of things in a very graphical sense? But, you know, some kind of an explorer.
Are you talking about like on the client side? I don't know anything about FishEye.
Okay, well, FishEye was just a tool that you would basically install on a web server. You'd point it at Subversion, it would go through it, and it would make this really friendly, you know, repository browser with graphical branches, and it was basically like Blame +++ on steroids on the web.
Right. So Git actually comes with a component called Git Web. So that it does basically what you're talking about. It's probably not nearly as pretty. It's pretty sort of bare bones, but you can go through, look at the revision history, look through all the commits, look at the file tree, and look at each individual file. It uses all Git naming conventions, so you're clicking on things that are called, you know, blobs and trees and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I find things a little confusing. I know that all of my check-ins so far in Git say unknown. Hmm. So somewhere I haven't put in my name yet.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's so, like the first thing in every
Git. Oh, that's the first thing? Okay.
I'm on
my 15th commit, and they're all unknown, so now I have to figure out how to go back and change them all.
There's a file in your home directory, wherever that happens to be, and it's called gitconfig.gitconfig, so it's a hidden file. And you put your name and your email address in there, and that's what gets recorded as your commit.
Okay.
It's not like Subversion where I have a user on the Subversion server, so it's just what I claim to be.
Right. The first thing we did when we had Subversion was we hooked up our domain user in the Windows universe, and it existed in Subversion.
Exactly.
So it just happened automatically.
Exactly.
It's interesting when the Unix world and the Windows world collide, and then you have to go and explain to someone who's never seen a Unix machine what a dot directory kind of implies. Interesting. Well, thanks so much, you guys, for sitting down with me today. It's good to see people using these tools in ways I hadn't thought about. I didn't know that you could plug them in and get into Subversion. And I wish you luck using this new tool on your Ruby on Rails projects. Thanks again, Andy, Gary, and Robbie here at Planet Argon in downtown Portland. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.
Thanks.